The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have made it start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to a very special Monday evening Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. Two great guests, great sense of humor, but a lot of information to share with us, too. A fabulous duo for a special Monday night program. First, a couple of announcements. So the first one I want to make is that because of the July 4th holiday, long holiday weekend, we're not going to be doing a Friday program or a Sunday program. And we don't do a Thursday program anyway. So there will be Hotel Mars. Roger Lanius is the guest, but those are pre-recorded. And I never know when John Batchelor is going to upload the show for all of us to hear and for me to archive on the Space Show website. But that will be about Roger's new book, which is a history of the Apollo era and other space things that he has put out for the anniversary. So you'll definitely want to hear Hotel Mars when it is archived. And tomorrow night we do our regular Tuesday program with Dr. John Jurist. But again, no program due to the July 4th holiday weekend for Friday or Sunday. So everybody have a great holiday weekend. So the next thing is, and I've been posting announcements about this on the website, the company that hosts the Space Show is doing mandatory server replacements and upgrades. And we cannot avoid it, and it is going to take down the Space Show website, and we don't know for how long, and we don't know if everything will work when these guys get through with what they're doing. So I have listed on the website, on the upcoming show menu, and then it goes into the center where all the programs are archived, and right now it's the first one listed, but after tonight's show it'll be the second one listed, how to listen to Space Show programs without going through the website to the Listen Live site. And I have listed the direct URLs for our streaming services with FastServe, which has a URL depending on your media player, and then the Stream Guys with their SG player and their SG mobile player. So I would suggest you print out that page or copy it or save it to something. But don't save it as a website page, because if our website goes down, you're not going to access that page. So this will tell you how to listen to live shows without going through our website. And if you forget all of this and you want to hear, say, the show tomorrow night, and you email me in a panic that I can't listen because your website is dead and I'm an idiot and I didn't check your notices, I will send you this as an email. And my Dr. Space email address will work because it is separate from the website through Office 365. Those of you that send me notes on the davidlivingston.com site or One Giant Leap, those pop accounts will be dead because they are pop accounts through the through those websites, and they'll be down until all the three websites on the server come back up. So those are my special announcements for tonight. And the final special announcement is that we're doing the 60-minute format. So please, if you want to get a question in for our two guests who I'm about to introduce, please do so while we're still on the air so that your question or comment can be heard. And we certainly do appreciate that. And remember, the phone line is the preferred way of reaching us. So for tonight, our toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Of course, you can reach us via email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. And then, assuming the website is still up and running while we're doing the show tonight, it is on our blog, which is all the way to the far right, to upcoming show menu. And the show tonight with Rod and Aggie is the first one listed. Open that up, and blog comments are down at the bottom. As soon as you post your comment or ask your question, I'll get a copy of it and can integrate it into our discussion, all pending upon InMotion Hosting not taking our site down tonight to work on their server upgrade. In addition, the website newsletter is posted on the website for the upcoming week. And notice we're booking shows into the end of the year, if you can believe that. We're still have something left in August and a little bit more left in September, but we're booking October, November, and December, and we just finished the halfway mark. So what a fast-moving year. It is just unbelievable to me. Everything we do is archived, and it's on our website, or you can easily download the program. Don't forget we have a store for Space Show paraphernalia, logo wear. To access it, click on any of the pages of Pepper Listening to the Space Show, and Pepper will take you directly to our Cafe Press site. And then finally, and always the most important, the Space Show is a nonprofit 501c3 supported by all of you, the listeners, and we need your support to continue the Space Show. And we thank those of you who do support us with your contributions and those of you that will be supporting us with your contributions. Remember, if you're a lucky, lucky dog and you pay federal income tax, you get a tax deduction for your gift. And if you're even more fortunate and you pay California's income tax, even California's new gas tax, you get a deduction as well, but not for the gas tax. Sorry about that, everybody. Our nonprofit site is onegiantleapfoundation.org. And you can check out and find out more about us there. You can also find out about being on the advisory board if you're interested. And you can also just email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. There is a PayPal link on the right side, upper right side of our homepage. And if those of you want to contribute but you don't want to do so electronically, there are instructions on how to do so with a check plus the mailing address. Finally, you see a huge Amazon button, and you wonder why we got a big Amazon button there. And that's because they have great nonprofit programs. Say what you want about Amazon, but they do support the nonprofit community, and we are registered with them. And if you click on that big Amazon button, it'll explain our two Amazon programs that we're qualified in. And when you buy things using our Amazon portal or the Smile Amazon site for nonprofits, we get a percentage donated to us by Amazon of your purchase price. So it's a great way to buy whatever it is you're buying from Amazon, books, personal items, business items, you know, toys, whatever, and have part of that purchase given to us by Amazon to help support the Space Show. And we are appreciative of Amazon for that. In addition to the individual donations I've been talking about, we have sponsorships. So remember, they get a full banner ad going across the homepage. They can change that banner ad as often as they want. And on the full-length shows, I read their 60-second or less promotional message. But on the shorter programs like tonight, I just mention our sponsors by name and give them big thanks, because without their sponsorship, we would not be bringing you all of these Space Show programs as well. So we shout out to Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, Moonwords, AIAA, the National Space Society, the Space Development Network, Celestis, the Space Plan, and AIAA. I think I may have said that one twice. But we're deeply appreciative to all of our sponsors, and if you're interested in being a sponsor, please check it out on onegiantleapfoundation.org or email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. So all of you know that I went to ISDC 2019 and was very, very impressed by it. I had a great time, had some fabulous talks, met a lot of people that will soon be coming on the Space Show, saw amazing films at their little film festival they had each evening, and the Chesley Bonestell film producer, which was my favorite of all the films, is going to be on the Space Show in the very near future. So I thought I would bring two of the brains behind ISDC on before it got too far away from us and kind of debrief ISDC, because I thought it was really a terrific conference. I mean, I really enjoyed the advanced propulsion and have some people coming on from there. I spent a lot of time in the moon track, and we'll have people coming on as a guest there. Madhu did a nice job with that. So Rod Pyle is our guest tonight, and all of you know him as a very prolific space author, historian. He does Ad Astra with the National Space Society, and his full bio is on the Space Show website, but if you listen to the show frequently, you have heard Rod many, many times. Rod is joined by Aggie Coburn, and she has managed the ISDC gig for the last 5 years. She does a fabulous job, and this year was no exception. And she has a company that does that. She also runs the Space Settlement Summit, and many of you have attended that. And her bio is also on the website, so you can read about her as well. She's a managing editor of Ad Astra, which, by the way, is an award-winning, very, very cool magazine. So we're going to talk a little ISDC, National Space Society, and other news tonight for about an hour. So Aggie and Rod, welcome back to the Space Show. It's always great to talk to you. And happy 4th of July before anyone else says that to you both.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having us here.
And since fireworks are legal in Sonoma, if I had thought about it, I would have had a ladyfinger or something here that I could have lit in my office and not sent off the fire alarm, and y'all could hear some fireworks in advance of the July 4th holiday.
Now that I would have enjoyed.
Yeah, so would the management of this place that I rent. I'm sure they would have loved it.
They would have loved it, yeah.
Highlights for ISDC from each of you. Aggie, well, let's start with you. What really got your attention as the highlight of ISDC?
You know, there were a couple of things. I think some of the speakers that we had, some of the keynotes that we had this year were excellent. It was a little bit different than some previous years, but we have over 200 speakers. So, you know, there's always such an assortment of conversations going on and sessions going on. But I think this year was exceptional that way. And also the film festival, you mentioned it, and that was something new that actually Jeffrey Notkin organized. And I thought that was really entertaining. We got good crowds to that. And we saw some films that had never been seen before, which is always kind of fun.
So I haven't been to ISDC for a while, so you don't traditionally have a film festival like this?
No, we don't traditionally have a film festival. Sometimes we have films, but even if we have them, they're not well publicized. They're there, and we try to get people into them. The difference this year was it was well publicized, it was talked about, it was in our conference guide, and our attendance, the rooms were pretty much full every evening when there was a film going on.
Absolutely, and I saw all the films, and I thought, oh, here comes another Apollo film, right? But they were really good films, and mm-hmm. I had not seen them before. But as I said in the uptick to the show, that the Chesley Bonestell film was really special, and not only did I learn an awful lot about all of what he did, not just his space art and science fiction rocket ships. But that producer did a great job, and I'm looking forward to Doug being on the Space Show in the near future about that.
He did. I actually had a chance to see that at the Newport Beach Film Festival. He invited me to that last year, and I saw the film, and I was so impressed with it that I invited him to be part of ISDC. And we also had a preview of the Nat Geo film that will be out this month in July on National Geographic, and nobody had seen that film previously.
Right.
So that was really a nice added bonus, too.
So if I may just give a tip of the hat. So Jeffrey Notkin of Meteorite Men Show fame on the Science Channel a few years back is our new president. So he and his assistant, Melissa Silva, put that together and did a great job. So I think that's sort of why it is on the map for the first time. And I'm ashamed to say that I didn't see all of even one of those films. In fact, I had worked on the Nat Geo film, and I still haven't seen the whole thing. So
I'll get you a copy.
To take your word for it. Yeah.
I have a copy of it. No, that was really well done and a nice touch, and we will continue to do that at each ISDC from now on. I think that was a great. And it was also good for people who weren't going to the dinner or didn't have the evening plans because it was at the same time. So it gave, you know, people something else to do that weren't involved in some other things that were happening.
Well, yeah, and since that hotel was in the hinterlands of the woods or something, I mean, there wasn't any place to go if you didn't have other plans. And so it worked out really well, really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like a great place to go as a captive audience, because honest to God, you couldn't walk any place. There was nothing around. I mean, it was really isolated.
It was interesting.
You could take the shuttle.
Driving up to that
hotel,
I had never seen a huge Sheraton like that in a completely residential neighborhood, and I kind of liked that in a way because it was nice and quiet, but we were really able to focus on what we were doing. But I thought, this is extraordinary. Never quite seen that before.
What was your highlight or group of highlights, Rod?
I think for me, I was running from pillar to post because I had a number of presentations to do and was trying to handle some press stuff. But we had Jim Bridenstine, who's the new NASA administrator, come give a talk. I thought that was sensational. He was, I thought, very candid. Didn't feel like a canned presentation at all. It was tailored to this crowd. He was very engaging. He took questions for close to a half an hour, I think, and was very candid in his answers. And, all comers were welcomed in terms of what kind of questions were being asked, so I really enjoyed that. We had a panel discussion with Al Worden, the Apollo 15 astronaut, and Jerry Griffin, flight director and director of Johnson Space Center. That was moderated by Tony Poston, who's chairing next year's conference, ISDC 2020. And I thought that was an extraordinary presentation. And Eileen Collins, who joined us for dinner one evening before her talk, I thought was just... I had met her only in passing before, but of that class of early shuttle astronauts, she was the first female shuttle pilot and commander and flew four missions. She was just extraordinary, both in terms of her presentation and just being a genuinely wonderful, engaging, kind person. It was a really wonderful experience for me.
I wanted to meet her, but I couldn't find her and see her. She has been a guest on the Space Show and unbelievably gracious and kind and just compelling and articulate. And you couldn't ask for a nicer, better representative, more articulate, intelligent person to talk space. And probably a lot of other topics, too. Maybe she'll come next year to Dallas, and I'll get another chance to meet her.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think the last thing I'd mention is the student attendance, which can be a bit overwhelming at times because they tend to – there's a lot of foreign students. They tend to cluster together in parts of the hotel in between sessions. But
They took over the lobby. Tell me about it.
Yeah, but we are getting huge groups of kids. You know, there's so much talk in the space community about, we've got to get the next generation engaged, and there's concern about not enough people going into science and engineering and math and so forth. But this just showed me, at least on the international stage, that these kids and the parents who send them are really, really interested in this stuff. And I think if we have any goal in that direction, besides increasing the competitions and the poster sessions and so forth that people like Lynn Zelinsky and Alice Hoffman are putting together, who are both senior members of the organization, it's to try and get more U.S. students involved. We're doing really well in international to the tune of, I don't know what, Aggie, 400 or 500 young
people. Close to 500 this year. And I think that's a really serious goal of getting more American students involved. And there are some locations where we do. Los Angeles being one of them, but I think we're really going to work seriously in Dallas as well to try to get several hundred U.S. students there, and there's also a proposal of some other contests that I think will bring in a number of other U.S. students. So I think that part of it's going to actually grow next year.
Well, that's good. What do the students have to do to be eligible to come to this, and how do they get funded?
They enter, for the most part, they're contests that they enter, and there are winners of the contest that are then invited to come and do presentations, and actually do presentations to the adults that are there. So it's an opportunity for some of these students for the first time to really, something that's close to them that they've been working on a long time, to actually present it in front of an adult audience, which is terrifying for some of them, but absolutely wonderful experience. And it has set many of them on the way to a career in this arena. And that's the really cool part of it, that, you know, we know we're really making a difference in their lives, and this is really something special for them, and they're very appreciative of having this opportunity. And I think by opening up some more doors and some more different types of contests, which is what we're looking at right now, that really helps. They don't pay very much to come. We keep it at a very minimum, as low as we can possibly keep it. They are responsible for their own costs getting there and things like that, but we really, you know, we want them there, so we try to make it as easy as possible for them to be there. And next year we have a much larger place, so you won't feel like they're crowding the lobby, because we'll have a whole section that will be focused on the student area. down the hall. So, you know, there'll be a lot more room to spread out. This one was a little tight.
Where actually is it going to be next year?
It's in Frisco, Texas. It's a suburb of Dallas, and it's at a conference center that's attached to an embassy suite. And it's huge. It's just an enormous place, and we essentially have all of it. So, you know, I would say minimum it's double the amount of space, but it's probably even more than that.
So you have the Embassy Suites Hotel is
yes.
where it's going to be held in Frisco, Texas.
Correct, but it's the conference center. It's not actually in the hotel. There's a conference center in Frisco that is attached to the Embassy Suites.
Okay.
And the conference itself is in that conference center.
What are the dates? We might as well talk about that for a minute.
Oh, that's a good question. I have it right here. It's May 28th to the 31st.
Okay. I actually have a question about it from Lonnie in Chicago, and says, how do you get to be a speaker at one of the tracks?
The track chairs essentially select the speakers, and we're in the process of working through the track chairs right now. And you apply. You send an abstract in. I mean, there's a number of different ways depending on what it is, what area it is, but that'll all be on the website. And the website is in process right now. We've got the initial framework of it up, and that'll all be up there by the fall, by September.
So the track chairs will be identified that early, too?
Some of the track chairs will be, because some of them are repetitive year after year, and those will be identified in the fall. Some of the others, not so quickly, but they will all be up there over the course of the fall. We're really working at getting the website up earlier, and the information up there earlier, and the track information, all of those things as early as we can. And then obviously we add to that throughout the winter and spring coming up to the conference, but try to get as much as we can, including some of the keynotes. So we are working away at that already.
Did either of you have time to attend any of the track sessions? Did you have any favorites or hear rumors about any that stood out?
I attended some of them, but in small quantities, you know, 10 or 15 minutes here and there. So I did hear comments about a number of them, and I heard very, very positive comments about a number of them, but I didn't get a chance to actually sit through the entire length of them. I also heard some of them had too many speakers too close together, so that's something else we're watching next year. We're not going to have these 10, 15, 20-minute talks. They're going to be at a minimum of 30-minute talks in all likelihood. So there's time to transition and really get a sense of it. There may be some shorter talks, but for the most part, we're going to try to keep them at 30 minutes.
The Moon group had 10-minute talks, so to speak.
I know.
That
was the one I heard about. That's
yeah.
the one where I heard some complaints from people that they were way behind. They thought the talks were really interesting, but the transition time wasn't there, and they got way behind.
The other thing that happened at the Moon thing, and I ought to mention it to Madhu if he's open-minded about it, but there were no shows, which is to be expected, and then he moved a speaker scheduled later in the day up to the no-show slot. So people who had marked down they want to go hear Joe Blow talk at 4 p.m., they come in the room at 4 p.m., and Joe Blow talked at 1:30. And
mm-hmm.
that's not a good practice to do, because
I heard about that too. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, and that was the Space Settlement Policy Forum that we did on a Wednesday, which was a little different this year. We often have pre-sessions. Space Solar Power is one of them, where we do these little pre-sessions the day before. But this time we actually had an all-day policy forum that went very well, and it was well attended. We are going to blend that into the conference next year, because I think it's important, and it's important that it be a part of it. But that was a little unique this year.
I think also, if I might just mention, I think one of the things that was also unique about this year, not just being in D.C., which is great if you're trying to get some of the movers and shakers in NASA and some of their affiliated contractors, but also because Greg Autry was the chair, and Greg's a professor of clinical entrepreneurship at USC. I'm not entirely sure what that is, but it sounds really impressive. And he's also our the NSS's vice president of space development, and he's been really, really engaged for the last, 3-4 years, and just has this Rolodex that just doesn't stop. People don't really have Rolodexes anymore, but you know what I mean? And he was responsible for bringing in a number of the big-name players that joined us, so my hat's off to him, because that was really a huge plus this year.
And he did bring in a lot of big-name people, too. Rod, did you get into any sessions, and did you have a favorite if you got to hear any of the sessions?
I did. A number of the Moon sessions I liked. They were short, as mentioned, but they did crackle right along, so you got, in a limited period of time, you got exposure to a lot of different things. I noticed that a lot of the young people were really quite engaged in that, because I think, obviously, the moon is so very current. And we also had a group from Georgia, which Georgia, the country, not the state, who came in and did a cultural performance called, I always get it wrong, Aggie, is it Chuck Rulo, I think? Is that right?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, it was a large singing group, and the highlight of it was they sang. It's a kind of an a cappella presentation of the song that was originally put on the Voyager record back in the 70s to go out with the Voyager probe, the outer solar system. So that was very moving and enjoyable as well.
The dog I'm hearing, I hope that's not my dog. Do one of you have a dog?
No, it's a dog near me, so I moved away from there.
Oh, well.
Not my dog, but it's a dog that's near.
Dogs are always welcome on the show. I just hope that Pepper wasn't downstairs barking at me to come down and do something for a problem. So,
yeah.
No, dogs get privilege on the space show.
Well, we've developed a dog neighborhood here, which is a little annoying. I love dogs, but when you got them barking all over the place, it can make you crazy. There was one other thing I wanted to mention. That was Martine Rothblatt, and I'm not sure, if you guys had a chance to hear her presentation.
I wanted to hear her, but I ended up being persuaded by Dr. Benaroya and his wife to go look at one of the museums that they wanted to see. But I really wanted to hear her about her technology and what she was funding and what she has done in the past. I looked up her bio and was very, very interested in her track record. And if I had gotten to meet her, I was going to ask her to be a guest on the space show. I love the kind of stuff that she's been involved in, especially the genetics and some of the other far-out kind of human research. How did it go?
I thought it was really interesting. I didn't get a chance to hear the entire thing, but I was there for a good chunk of the beginning of it and then came back towards the end. And it was really a fascinating presentation with some real practical components to it. That's what was really interesting to me, was that it wasn't theoretical out there. I mean, in a sense it was, but it was really some very, very interesting, you know, kind of possibilities of what could be. And it's really nice to hear that. You know, we hear a lot of different things, and that one just took on a life of its own. And I heard people's comments afterwards that had a chance to listen to her, and they were all just so impressed with the information that came out of that. It was very challenging, really interesting, and really different. And I think that's what I liked about it the most, the fact that it took a completely different tone than some of the other talks did.
How did it mesh with a space conference?
You know, I heard different opinions. Some people thought it was a really interesting, dynamic possibility, and others thought it was too far out there. I think it meshed really well. I thought she did a wonderful presentation. It was well executed. It was a lot of interesting information. And, you know, it's interesting to hear some of the different practical options of what can be done. And you don't always hear that. A lot of it is a little bit more, from some of the speakers, it's a little bit more, you know, the possibilities of. I just thought it was a really interesting, well-executed presentation.
Did her talk get archived on the web at all? Is it out there for people to hear?
It's not on the web, but you can get copies of the talks from... There were folks there that actually... We had two things going on. One is that we filmed the entire thing, thanks to our AV people. They just set cameras up, and these were 4K cameras that were just set towards the stage. So we were able to capture all of the keynotes, all of the luncheon, and all of the dinner speakers. And that was just strictly captured on two cameras. And then we had the group that often comes in and tapes all the different sessions, and they did capture everything, and you can buy, they're still on DVDs, which is a little old-fashioned, but they are for purchase. And we're going to put an ad into Ad Astra, and Rod doesn't even know that yet, but we're going to put it up, maybe a half-page ad into Ad Astra explaining how to get a hold of them and where you can get copies of everything, and I can certainly pass it on to you, David.
Yeah, please do. I would love to get her talk, and I like the far out, and I think she'd be a great space show guest. I did a lot of research on her background to see who she was and why she was speaking there, and I wish I had gone rather than going to the museum. But
we'll get
so
a copy to you, and I also have some links to some of these talks. And we're doing some things a little different this year. We're actually taking some of the material and putting it into some short programming. And we will make that available, and it'll be on, you know, different components, and some for YouTube. And then we've got a new project going on for recruiting, we'll call it new members, but recruiting younger members and new people to the NSS, and it'll be part of that as well. So we're working on a number of different things.
I spent a lot of time in the advanced propulsion track, and I thought it was excellent. And I've got a couple of the speakers coming on the space show. And listeners, it was really one of the best advanced propulsion tracks I've heard at a conference. And I think you'll really be impressed by the guest I have coming on the show. And then the students came in, and man, they were really sharp in that topic, which is pretty amazing because it's out there too. But the students seem to be really qualified to be there and to talk about these topics. And their papers and presentations were not just garbage little school kid stuff. Some of it was really, really advanced. So my hat goes off to them.
Did you get a chance to look at the posters?
Yes, I went in and did look at them. I was impressed with that as well. I forgot to talk about that, in fact. But the posters were very interesting. I thought they were as good a quality and as interesting as when I go see posters at an AIAA event.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, these students put so much effort into that, and they work on it for a very long time. And that's the exciting part of it, is that they're so enthusiastic.
I have another ISDC note, and this is Shelley in Tucson. And Shelley says, how do you determine where ISDC is going to be held each year? Does a different chapter put in a plug for their city? Do you know far in advance, like where it's going to be over the next 3 years?
Actually, we look at different locations. We've now decided that Los Angeles will be every third year approximately, and Washington, D.C. probably about the same, about every third year. And then there'll be another city in there. We've rotated to different places over the years and just discovered that L.A. and D.C. are really the strongest two areas. So that's going to become a little bit more repetitive. There's a number of different ways. Sometimes we look for the local groups. Where is there a strong group? And we've done some real analysis of where the membership is, the membership base, and where the most activity is. And Los Angeles is obviously near the top of that, as is D.C., but we discovered there's a huge contingency in Dallas as well, and there's a very active group in Dallas. So that made sense to go to. And we're looking at a couple of other areas. Denver is one of them. Somewhere in the Midwest or in the north middle of the country, because LA obviously West Coast and DC East Coast, so it's always nice in between one to do something that's more central. And Dallas ended up being a good option with a strong group there and a great location for it. So that's kind of the rotation pattern. And yes, we do look for, you know, is there a local group there that could really focus on the local marketing and the universities there and get publicity out locally? And then what's a good target area? There's some areas where it's just much stronger for NSS members or just the space community in general, and we want to be in those areas.
Ben is in New York with an email, and Ben said, given that this was in the Washington, D.C. area, did you have a lot of top policy people there? Were there people from Congress there maybe being influenced one way or another about our space policy and our moon policy? Was that a major reason for having it in Washington, D.C.?
That was part of it. I think, Aggie, I remember there was quite a bit of discussion about staffers from the Hill coming before we actually hit the ground there, but I'm not sure how many I saw. Did you get a sense of that?
I think on the Wednesday, we had much more of that on the Wednesday than we did the Thursday through Sunday because of the one special session on Wednesday.
Because of the policy session.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know a staffer if they were standing next to me in line, so unless they wore a big badge that said, I'm a congressional staffer, but... I would think that this would be prime if they had the time to go to really learn something about space and what their constituents think about space.
And
yeah,
they were all invited.
For them to see some of the people speaking that they might not otherwise have a chance to see, at least in person. We had Tori Bruno there from ULA, for instance, who gave a talk that I thought was fun on, you know, the next 20 to 25 years in space, and then just the whole I think there were three presentations on the Space 2.0 subject. I mean, I did three. There were others, too. But that was a big push, too, because we had just distributed that book up on the Hill a couple months earlier, so we were trying to link that in as well.
How did that end of the conference panel go late in the afternoon on Sunday when I couldn't stay for it, that Madhu wanted to have at 4 or 5 o'clock? I know you were one of the authors on that panel. How did that go down, Rod?
It went well. You know, whenever you get authors sitting together and say, okay, tell us about your book, I mean, for us, it's nothing better because it's a chance to get up and preen when you normally spend 90% of your time working in a little dark corner trying to get your book done. So it was good. And, you know, Madhu puts on a good show. As mentioned, we'll have to work a bit on the durations, but he did pack those sessions from pillar to post.
Unbelievable. Standing room only.
Yeah,
every one of them.
Both in terms of attendance and in terms of speakers, it was, you know, it really crackled along. So I enjoyed that aspect of it a lot. So that panel was fun.
So if one takes that as a guide to, is there an interest in returning to the moon, I would say it's overwhelming, because it was more packed than any other track I intended, constantly.
Yeah, and so this, I mean, obviously we're dealing with a very focused audience here, right? Because it's
correct,
the National Space Development Conference, a lot of NSS members. I mean, one of the reasons I like to go to events like that and even Space Fest is just to be able to hang out with a group of like-minded people that I can go off and huddle in a corner and talk about anything I want without getting that glazed over look that I get from people in my normal walks of life who are tired of hearing about it. But you know, even given that, I think when you're looking at a country where, you know, support for NASA overall, if you look at the polls, is still pretty similar to what it was as early as the 60s, roughly 50-50. It depends on which questions you're asking, of course, and how you parse out the numbers. But that crowd certainly was energized by that and wanted to know more. And so I thought that was really thrilling. And I kind of wish that I had put a couple more forward-looking articles in the special Ad Astra that we handed out there, but it really was focused on the Apollo anniversary. So in the next issue, we'll get back to having more articles on lunar development and in-situ resource utilization and so forth.
By the way, I had an Ad Astra question because I got an issue, I think it was the anniversary issue of Apollo or something, that did not have your super-duper cool textured cover.
Yes.
What did you do?
I decided, made an executive decision against some advice from others, that I wanted it to be a standout special, and we were considering at the time getting it on the news racks for public consumption. So because the general special magazines, special editions of magazines tend to have full gloss covers, we went for that. And it was interesting. I was telling Aggie just yesterday, I was at a bookstore, and I was looking around for other Apollo special editions in print, because we're one of the few magazines of this type, at least run by a large nonprofit, that's still actually being printed on paper. And there weren't very many of them. And we came in at 100 pages on this one of really diverse articles. The average that I saw was between 45 and 60. And we have maybe 5 pages of ads in the whole magazine. And as you know, the commercial ones tend to have about their page counts about 1/3 advertising. So
right.
In terms of bang for the buck and overall quality, I think we hit it out of the park with this one.
And it's on the commercial newsstands?
It is not. It's going to be out digitally in a couple of weeks in all those formats. It'll be available on Apple and Amazon and Google and a couple of other platforms. But in terms of print, it was just not something we could do in time.
Well, I missed the textured cover.
It's coming back next time.
Yes, it will be back,
deal,
David.
Okay?
Don't worry.
I wondered.
This was a major discussion on this one.
Yeah, and I wondered why for the 50th did they go back to the glossy cover? So now you've explained it.
Well, and part of it was also because that illustration, which was commissioned from James Vaughn, who does most of our covers, is a very gifted artist. Just, I thought, looked spectacular in full gloss. It wouldn't have been quite the same in the. This doubled stock that we normally use, but don't worry, we're going back.
Thank you, David.
That's interesting. And Jane, speaking of Ad Astra, Jane is also in Chicago, and she says, does Ad Astra accept articles from people who may not be known or known very well?
Yeah, it depends on what they are. We have a pitch process, and the links to do that are on the NSS website, which is open to the public. You don't have to be a member to access those parts of the website. So they just pitch the story, and generally they run anywhere from 800 to a max of about 2,500 words. And, you know, I'll send a little email back kind of describing, if they've got interesting pitch, describing the tone of what we're looking for and kind of where our audience is in terms of levels of sophistication and engagement and so forth. So, yeah, we do accept outside stuff.
Are you the deciding person?
I'm the decider.
You're the decider.
I mean, we have an editorial committee that will go through some of this, depending on what it is. For a run-of-the-mill article, I'll generally make the selection, but for some other stuff, I'll either go to NSS leadership or to one of the publications committees or both and just say, okay, what do we think? But in general, we're not so overwhelmed with submissions that that's a big concern.
Do you pay for the articles?
We do.
Oh, you do?
We do. And more than an awful lot of people these days. I've heard, you know, the pay range because we're print, normally a print publication would pay a little more than online only, but because of print and digital, we're paying more or less online rates, but I've heard for article rates in this area being as low as zero to $40 or $50, so we're well above that. So yeah, we do pay.
Cool. And the lead time, you send one in, if it gets accepted, it's published within 3 months?
Yeah, we're quarterly, so it depends. For instance, in this issue, I had an oversupply of articles, so and a couple of them were quite long. I'm guilty for creating one of those because I really wanted something that looked at parts of the Apollo 11 history that we didn't see all the time, or hear about all the time, rather. So we had probably 40% more than we needed, so a lot of that's going to get rolled over into the next two issues, but generally within a quarter or two. But we are quarterly, so we can't respond real quickly in terms of getting them in print.
I have another email, Chris, and Chris is from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he says, are people able to take any of what they may have taken pictures of or recordings and use their own material to promote, say, going to the moon or something else in space that might have been talked about at the ISDC?
That's yours, Aggie.
If they had their own phone or whatever and they were taking pictures while they were there?
Let's say they took a picture of someone making a presentation on lava tubes, and they want to somehow promote going to the moon and living in lava tubes. Can they use that?
They can. I mean, we cannot stop people from using photos that they've taken with their own you know, phones or whatever they took them with. We ask that they use good judgment with it, but people post things all over. And in fact, social media-wise, we want them to post things. You know, we asked that people while they were there take pictures and put comments on and go on as much social media as they could, because that's one of the ways we get our message out there and we get information out there. So as long as it's done with taste, yes, absolutely.
Listeners, there's still time if you want to continue sending emails. That's fine. But the phone number is 1-866-687-7223. And if you went to ISDC and you're listening and would like to tell us your favorites and what you thought, we'd certainly like to hear from you. Or if you have questions, or you have questions even about the National Space Society and their focus, let us hear from you. And again, there still is time to get a call in or to continue with email. Dr. Space, DRSPACE, at thespaceshow.com. One more time, 1-866-687-7223. It seemed to me that there's more of a focus of on the moon than going to Mars. Is that my own way of perceiving things, or is that just the way it worked out, or was that a design objective?
I think this year there was certainly an emphasis on that, partly because Matthew worked so hard to really bulk out his lunar track, but also, of course, because that's what NASA's doing. So there was some discussion of that, and I think for both this year and next year, there's an enhanced emphasis on the moon, just because we're in the midst of what we hope will be a ramp up to a successful return in the next handful of years. So it made sense to really accentuate that. Did you happen to get to the session that Al Worden and Jerry Griffin did, David?
No, I don't know what happened, but no, I did not get to that one.
Because both there and I moderated those guys on a panel along with Walt Cunningham and Fred Hayes in Iowa a couple months before, and we talked about that last time we were on the show together, I think. But I was really impressed with how forward-looking they were. You know, it's easy to descend into telling war stories about the old days and interesting things that happened during those missions, and that's a lot of fun. But all of those guys, and in particular the two that were that came back for ISDC, I thought really were right on it. I mean, they were really well informed about what was going on, as you might expect, but also had some interesting visions for the future, and remarkably open-minded about internationalism, including working with China, which I found impressive.
I found that impressive, too, and I found the students. There were a lot of students from Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is Eastern Europe still a region? I don't know if we're allowed to say that anymore, but
we still say it. It just refers to certain countries there. But yes, we get a lot of students from several Eastern European countries, and an awful lot of students from India. You probably know
that. From India. But back in my younger day, there would have never been students from an Eastern European country there.
Right,
you know,
right.
They'd be behind the Iron Curtain and totally taboo. But they're at the forefront of technology and eagerness to learn in space, so that was really interesting. Romania was unbelievable.
Yeah, and you kind of touched on this. I mean, the hunger they have for this. I mean, India, it makes a lot of sense because they're becoming a technological powerhouse,
right,
provider of high tech and so forth. But the Romanian contingent and some of the other former Eastern European regions was a real pleasant surprise for me, because that wasn't something I would have normally just pulled out of a hat. If I had reached and blindly selected a country, it probably wouldn't be Romania. But now that I've met these kids, I can see they are just really, really thrilled to be there and really engaged. You know, they go and they listen and they learn and they want to talk to the people that have made themselves available to talk to the kids when they do these sessions. Jeff Notkin did a big student plenary. And he then went into another ballroom, and signed autographed copies of Ad Astra for, I don't know what was it, Aggie, about an hour. I think there was about 400 kids that worked through there. And he was
That's where all our Ad Astras went. We kept saying, why are all the magazines gone? And we realized the students were just taking so many of the magazines. There was another interesting, you know, there's another interesting observation. I had a conversation with one of the teachers from Romania. And she was explaining to me that this is a huge educational opportunity for them. These are the students that want to go on, whether it's into STEM or STEAM programs or others, but this really adds to their ability to go on into college-level programs and things like that, and that a lot of them become very, very engaged for that reason, and sometimes to come to the United States as well, that one of their goals may be to come to university in the U.S., and this is certainly helpful for them in their ability to be able to do things like that.
One of the things I noticed was how incredibly, for the most part, not all, polite the students were, and how incredibly well presented they were physically and personally. They were dressed nicely, they were well groomed, they were, for the most part, they were pretty civil and nice. Some of them were loud and some of them played with the elevators back and forth. But I mean, it's really refreshing to see these young people that are not what I see when I go to Los Angeles, for example.
No, these are very well dressed, and many of them were wearing school uniforms. They don't necessarily look like uniforms. They look like they're just wearing very nice suits and outfits.
Yeah, I thought.
But they are their school uniforms that they're wearing there in some cases. But you're right, extremely, extremely well dressed, extremely polite in many cases. Very grateful and very thankful for having the opportunity to be there.
And
I didn't see a single slouchy hoodie in the whole bunch.
And
no, not one. Not one pair of jeans either, you notice. Not one pair of jeans on these kids.
And much better English than my Romanian, let me put it that way.
I think they've got better English than my English, frankly.
It is refreshing. I would like to have seen more American students participating and competing, but maybe that'll be different next year in the Dallas area.
And I think one thing we're working on, the gentleman who's chairing 2020, Tony Poston, who I mentioned earlier, is a provost at a junior college in Des Moines and is very keen on that subject. So we're beginning to discuss now, because, you know, we're a year out. Seems like a lot of time, but given the dynamic of these things, it's not that long. But that is going to be a big focus of his, is try and get more domestic students engaged. And that probably will hinge largely on how effective our social media efforts are.
Since you both do ISDC on a yearly basis, how did this stack up and compare to previous ISDCs over the last 3 or 4 years? Can you tell a different interest level in space, a different focus? Are different people showing up? Is it the same old, same old? What can you say year to year?
I think we get different people when we're in different geographic areas, and our numbers were excellent. We actually hit the same number or maybe even a little bit higher than L.A., and L.A. is typically our very largest ISDCs, and D.C. came very, very close, if not surpassed it by just a little bit. So I think the interest level is there, and I think when we place ourselves in the right area geographically and we get the message out in a strong way, and we did a lot more for this conference and for LA than we had the opportunity to do previously, and it shows up. We did a lot more social media. We did a lot more press releases and releases of information. We went after our own members in a bigger way, and we just targeted more and targeted geographically more. And I think, and this isn't the dollars and cents yet because we still have to work that out, but just in terms of overall numbers, we're getting higher and higher numbers every year in the last few years, and I think it's going to be the same in Dallas and the same in L.A. the following year because we'll be back in L.A. the year after. And there is just such a strong interest right now. Anytime you mention space, I mention the magazine, people get really excited about it. And it is the world out there, too. It's not just, our select little world. There's a lot of people very, very interested in what's going on. It's in the LA Times, where I am, on a regular basis. You're seeing something all the time of what's going on, and different companies mentioned, different people mentioned. And it's just so much more out there now. And so you've got a lot of people who aren't in this industry who just have a really, really strong interest, and they like to attend conferences like this. In fact, several of them told me it was fantastic, and they'd never attended anything like this before.
Rod, how big a crowd will our panel at Griffith Observatory pull in? What do you expect? You're more familiar with it than I am on the 18th.
Yeah, I think that thing's going from the 16th to the 21st.
Yeah, it's a whole week or something
That poll's really strong. Laura Danley, the curator there, gave me some numbers, but it's in the tens of thousands by the time all is said and done. Now, that's not obviously going to be in the auditorium because it's not that large, but in terms of just people moving through there who are drawn by that event. I worked up there for about 10 years and I was younger, and besides being the only truly major planetarium and museum of its type in the region, it also has the virtue of being this big white marble and concrete icon up on the hill side of Mount Hollywood. So you've got this incredible kind of visual appeal. So we used to get a ton of attendance just off of that, but it'll be in the many thousands easily, and we're going to be very busy while we're there.
Looking forward to it. I had a lot of people that text me and came up to me that were listeners to the Space Show and said that they were coming to, they came to ISDC because they heard so much about it, and it was in a geographical area where it wasn't a big deal for them to get to. So the outreach does help and does work for sure. For people that didn't show up, that didn't for one reason or another make it, what would you say, this might be a little hard, but what would you say would be too bad? You really missed this incredible blank. What would you put in the blank?
Well, just for me, as I already mentioned, having a chance to see the NASA administrator talking candidly to a group that was of a certain level of sophistication and be able to focus his message for us was really thrilling. And I think, as also mentioned, Eileen Collins, and there's a number of other speakers there, but a lot of it's just the camaraderie. This isn't the kind of group of people you get to hang out with every day. You may go to a smaller event put together regionally by people on a more regular basis, but in terms of just the sheer mass of people meeting new folks every 10 or 15 minutes or every hour, you can share these interests with and get new insights. And I'm not talking just about the speakers. I'm just talking about the people that are in attendance. I find to be really thrilling and fun because, at least for me as an author-editor, I spend a lot of time working kind of solo, and it's just wonderful to be able to engage in the social side of it like that. What do you think, Aggie?
I agree. I think a big part of it, certainly listening to the speakers, hearing what they have to say, but I think a very big part of it is just the conversations that take place and the people that you get to meet. And I think that's true of a lot of these events. I run a lot of events outside of the space world as well, and I always say it's one of the best things about events is who you get to meet and who you get to talk to there and continue a relationship with if it makes sense to continue it. You'll never get that in a teleconference call. You'll never get that, you know, in a phone conversation. That's a face-to-face type thing. And there are a lot of really incredible people that you just get to mix and mingle with and spend time with and have a meal with at a conference like this, at ISDC and other conferences like this. It's just a really good opportunity.
I second it. The opportunity to, you could have met Bridenstine if you wanted to. I mean, he was approachable, and Scott mm-hmm. Pace was mingling before lunch, but Marcia Smith was there. So yeah. You guys hear her all the time on the space show, but she has the best policy site, in my opinion, every place for the web. I could go, Jeff Faust was there. I mean, you know, and, mm-hmm. and with the Space Review
right.
and, mm-hmm. and Space News, Tariq was there. I mean, I could just go down the names of the people that you read and you hear about or that write the books. Zubrin was hanging out there selling his book.
Right.
Jeff Greeson was there. You could have talked to Jeff endlessly, and he was meeting with lots of other, you know, people that were there. Al Warden, as you talked about, was there and hanging out in the bar, and you know, I could just again go down the list. So the opportunity to meet really great people and ordinary people doing great things was second to none. That to me was better than all the programming.
I think that's a really important thing at any of these events. I think it's a critical thing, and people forget about that, especially younger people, because they're so used to everything being visual and on their phones and on computers. And this hands, you know, shaking hands and meeting people face-to-face and having one-on-one conversations with them is really pretty incredible, and it's at places like that, and particularly this event with some of the names that you mentioned. You just stand in the lobby and you can just have these amazing conversations, and you can mix into any conversation. You're welcome into any of it because you're all there for the same conference.
Absolutely.
So it's very easy to get involved in conversations with people, and you can find them and just start chatting with them.
And
these are people
who
never get you. You'd never be able to get them on the phone or anywhere else in any other setting.
I got a caller for you guys.
Okay.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you? Thank you for calling. Hello, caller. Don't tell me they hung up.
Uh-oh.
Caller, going once, twice. They haven't hung up because the dial tone is not on the line.
Hello?
Yes, caller, are you there?
I must be the caller you're referring to.
Yes.
Dr. Livingston, Aggie and Rod, this is Ken Ruffin calling from the Dallas area.
Hi, Ken.
I'm the vice chair of next year's ISDC. And just wanted to say that you guys are doing an excellent job of promoting how great this year's conference was, and also looking forward to next year's conference. So
absolutely, thank you, Ken.
Yeah. So also, you know, you were talking about a variety of different things. There were a few times earlier. I wish I could have jumped in quicker. You were talking about the students, you know, student participation internationally, and, you know, the wish that we all have for more American students. And that's certainly going to be a big push for ISDC 2020 to encourage those students to attend. And additionally, you were just talking about, you know, highlights of the conference and, you know, what's a great reason to come to the conference. And you all mentioned some very important things, very exciting things that I agree with. But in addition to that, you know, there are many people who communicate on social media, especially the younger folks, as we know. Well, I had a chance, not just this year, but during the last few ISDCs, to meet some of my social media friends face-to-face. I mm-hmm. post that, hey, I'm going to ISDC, and I post leading up to each ISDC, you know, as the weeks and days tick by, and people reply, hey, I'm going to be there too, and, you know, I'm going to look for you, and I have a list now of people attending their first ISDCs after seeing whether it was my post or anyone else's post on social media. So this idea of space becoming more popular slowly but surely once again, you know, it's a fantastic thing.
Absolutely, and thank you, Ken. And yes, students from the region, I think, are going to be a really important addition to the Dallas conference, and having some additional contests and things in the area will bring more of them in. And I think that's an important add-on that we need to be spending more time cultivating in every area that they're in, that we're in, is getting more American students there. And social media is a huge part of that. As you said, social media is probably the biggest part of that.
Ken, keep us posted during the year if you listen to Space Show programs, and call us from time to time on open lines and tell us how you're doing for the conference for 2020.
Yeah, no problem. And I apologize for not getting a moment to say hello to you face-to-face, Dr. Livingston.
Well,
so, I'll do better the next time.
Do better the next time. And anything else, or are you... Is your call over? Do you have something more you want to add?
That's all for now. I'll have lots to say during the next 11 months.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got, which will probably be the last question, and this is Jackie in Atlanta, and said, this is going to be a presidential year, and it may be very critical for space. Do you think you will have any of the presidential candidates coming to speak at ISDC?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know,
yeah, that's a, that is an interesting question.
I mean, DC is one thing, obviously, because that's the crux of all this. In terms of other regions, I think a lot of the difficulty is depending on the prominence of the candidate, security concerns, and just the logistics of getting them in and out. You know, we were careful with Bridenstine. Obviously, the year before, we had Jeff Bezos there, and he had a security team that, you know, had to assess the facility first and watch over him while he was there. So that's kind of a big part of it. And it can impact other things. It's kind of a ripple effect, as you can imagine. So I don't know. Aggie, have you given that any thought?
I think anything's a possibility, and there may be some that are invited, and there were this year, certainly, as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you never know, and it could happen, but I wouldn't even guess at this point.
Let's host the candidate space debate.
Why don't you invite them by Skype, and then they wouldn't have to have all their security crap?
That's true. You know, part of the problem, though, with Skype is you've got to make sure you've got a really, I mean,
yeah, I know.
You and
half
I talk about this all the
work.
Time, right?
Yeah.
There's a signal. You got to have that really solid internet connection, and a lot of hotels just still aren't there. But I think for Dallas, actually, that's one of their strong points, if I remember correctly, is that they've got
it. Yeah, it is one of their strong points.
I did want to add one thing before we moved on, which is, you know, organizationally for the NSS in general, not just ISDC, we've been talking for a number of years now about trying to be more engaging for young people, and that's something we're working on both in terms of the magazine and the organization at large, is trying to get more content in there that's not just relevant to youth, but where young people can see themselves. You know, they can see other people their age getting involved in things and doing things in the industry and get a sense of, because I remember when I first joined the NSS back in the Jurassic era, at least comparatively speaking, for my age, one of the reasons that I did so was because I wanted access. I wanted access to the information. I wanted access to some of the activities going on. And we're really trying to remind ourselves that that's critically important, so that if I'm a young person who really, it's a lot easier to find that information now than it was back in the old days, but who really is passionately interested in this, I want to be able to use this organization to help get some leverage and some access to what's happening, what's new, and how I can chart my path into that industry, whether you're going to be working as an engineer or a technician or on the legal side, on the policy side, anywhere you're going to go, because there's so much opportunity coming up in the next 10 years. That's another area that we're really trying to focus aggressively on.
Since we're beyond the hour point, any concluding comments or anything we've missed that we should have talked about that either of you would like to bring forward? Rod, you want to go first?
Sure. I would just encourage people, obviously, because I'm a member of the organization, to become a member of the organization. You don't have to be a member to come to the conference. Anybody can come. You do get a discount for joining when you're there, if you want to package those two things. But, you know, joining isn't necessarily as strong an attraction as it used to be for a lot of younger people. I keep being told that membership-driven organizations are struggling in this era, but there are advantages to membership. You get the magazine, you get, there's an electronic publication we have called Downlink, which keeps you updated on news that's more focused on the organization and what it's doing. And like I said, we're really trying to kind of refocus a little bit on a younger audience and engage younger people. So I just say, give it a shot, you know, join for a year, and if it is helpful to what your goals are and fulfills you. A lot of people, I think, join because they just want to be part of something bigger. They want to be part of something larger and special, and this is one way to do it and engage in that larger, very exciting conversation that's going on.
Aggie?
Yeah, I agree with Rod. I think there's a lot of reasons for membership, and I think a big part of it is just what we were talking about. It's communications. It's getting to an opportunity to meet and talk to some of these other folks, to read up on what's going on, but in a different perspective, because Ad Astra is a different perspective. And I think that, you know, even though membership is not what it used to be, belonging is even more important. So membership isn't the key anymore. It's not that you get all sorts of, information that you couldn't get previously. But what it is it gives you the camaraderie. It gives you a group of people to be involved with that have the same interest or similar interests and to grow with it. So I think really the important thing with the NSS, with ISDC, with the publication, all of those things is this camaraderie and the relationship building.
And it's also worth mentioning in most regions of the country and around the world, also increasingly we've got a chapter structure. So if you are a member, or if you're a new member and you want to get more engaged on a local or regional level, quite frequently you'll find there's a chapter near you. If not one, you can start. If there isn't, you can start one. And that's a good way to get sort of your immediate goals met, is by having a local or regional chapter.
I want to thank you both for being with us. And if I can do a shameless plug for our Griffith Observatory panel discussion.
Please.
For those of you in the greater L.A. Area, it's Thursday night, July 18th, 7 p.m., and Rod and I and another gentleman who I think is retired from Lockheed, I don't remember his name, are talking about Apollo then and why go back to the moon now.
And Leonard David is joining us.
Leonard told me he wasn't on for the 18th.
He was on
the 19th.
Okay.
So he and he's only coming in, I think, on the 18th. I've been talking to him about something else. But I would love to have him with us because he's a fabulous asset no matter what night he's on. But come and meet us and come and meet Rod and come and meet me and talk NSS if you want, or talk going to the moon or space or Griffith or the coyotes out in the field there, or you know, whatever grabs you. But we'd love to meet you, and you'll meet my son Michael and his friend Amanda. They're going to be there. Unfortunately, Pepper won't be there, but we look forward to it, and I look forward to more NSS programming and conferences and contacts and some really cool stuff that ends up on the Space Show. And the Space Show sees NSS as a great source because you're involved in so many cool things with so many great people that it's an endless resource. And I think all of us should realize that and help support it, because it's only an endless resource because it's supported so well. So keep that in mind, everybody.
And are you still going to be in town on the 20th, David, or are you going to be heading back?
I'm heading back on the 20th because Simberg and his buddy Bill Simon are supposed to do Ebola Terra on Sunday the 21st.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, I haven't heard from them that they're not doing it, so I'm still assuming I have that Sunday program, plus I have to release Pepper from the kennel, so there's another reason to get back.
Well, if you are,
we also
down,
have the Science
I'm
Center
totally
event going on the Saturday.
What's the Science
about that?
What's the Science Center?
California Science Center. We're doing co-hosting a live broadcast for the Apollo anniversary on KFI, which is our big blowtorch AM talk station down here.
Right.
So we'll be up there for about 3 hours doing that.
Okay, that's where the Shuttle Endeavor is, correct?
Yeah, so there's that, and then they're running in their beautiful new IMAX theater. They're going to be running the CNN Apollo 11 film, the one that was in the theaters about 2 months ago. But this time we get to see it seven stories high, so that'll be pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I may still be forced to drive back by then, but if I can change my mind or my plans, I'll keep that in mind.
Excellent, and it's free.
Okay, I don't know if Griffith is free or not, and I don't know if they're streaming any of their programming. Maybe they are. I'll have to find out about that. But I look forward to seeing you, and Aggie, hope to see you again soon at something down there, up here, Dallas, someplace on this planet.
Hope so as well. Someplace on the planet.
So I look forward to our next chat about NSS and programming, and we'll keep doing it. So thank you both for being with us and for a great event in early June in the Washington, D.C. area. It was really fun and informative and well worth the time and trouble and money to be there. And I heartily recommend it for everyone. It was a great event, and you missed out on some great opportunities. Don't do that for the one in Dallas. Yeah, go to the one in Dallas. You'll have different opportunities. Good night for the Space Show from Rod, Aggie, and David. Everybody have a great weekend. And remember, look on the website for instructions on how to hear the show if they black out the website for their server updates, and copy that information, because that's the only way you'll get to a live program, because the show website pages won't be working until they restore their server. Thank you again. Good night, everybody. Happy July 4th as well. Keep looking up.